You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show. Going to be a great week for you guys. Got a huge, huge lineup for the show this week. Starting off today with Matt Moore from the Action Network. He is super knowledgeable. Going to be joining me in that last segment today after the Monday mailbag. Tomorrow, going to be joined by Sam Strantz from the Barn Burner Network. Wednesday, we're going to have Chris Harrington. Thursday, we're going to have Joe Mullinex. And Friday, we're going to have Amari Sankofa. So, obviously, Chris is with the Daily Memphian. Joe Mullinex is obviously his was so kind to give up his weekly spot and move to a different day because Chris could only make it one day. So, obviously, Chris is with Grizzly Bear Blues. And then Amari Sankofa with the Athletic. So, a huge, huge week for you guys. I'm probably going to ask everybody what they think about the Marc Gasol situation and what they should do. So I think we'll probably get a bunch of different takes about Marc Gasol and what they should do. But, man, the weekend was awful. The weekend was garbage. I won't say it was garbage because the game on Friday, the Celtics game, it wasn't bad. You know, it was a game where Kyrie Irving's really good at basketball, and that's kind of what it boiled down to is Kyrie Irving's really good. And they played there were some defensive issues, but if you've seen that game, like if that's the game you're losing, you kind of like, you know what, that's fine. Like it is what it is because Kyrie Irving's really good at basketball. I mean, the Celtics are a really good team. They lost, they played well, they played hard, but they lost, and that's okay. And I think that's probably where, that's definitely where I landed. Obviously, if you follow me on Twitter, you know that's where I landed on Friday, but I think that's largely where everybody lands. I mean, you know, I wrote an article about the effort that the Grizzlies needed last week. I mean, it really is what it boiled down to. And then on Saturday, they go out and it was just, Saturday was garbage. Saturday was absolute garbage. And it was one of the things where I looked at it and I was like, it's definitely time. I was getting in the car to go on with the Marc Gasol trade, but now I'm full fledged. You got to trade Mark and you got to do it before the deadline. I mean, whatever you can get for him, as long as it's not worse than the cap space, but cap space is a thing. As long as it's not worse than cap space, I think, hey, you go out and get him. I think there are teams that would want him. We talked with Matt Herlicka last week. He mentioned Charlotte. I think is definitely a team that might benefit from having someone like Marc Gasol. So I think the Grizzlies they have to. It's time. It's time to be sellers. I know that it was fun. It was a fun idea to go back and run it back this year and zig when everybody was zagging and all whatever else you want to call it. And it was great. The idea of Mark and Mike together going and trying to make the playoffs again was fun, but now that's dead. That's dead and gone. And I think the Grizzlies have to be sellers at the deadline. They sell off every expiring contract you have. Get whatever you can to build towards long term, whether that's assets. If you can somehow get a restricted free agent out of somebody that you may or may not want to pay this summer, depending on how they play. You know, those are the type of things you need to start looking for. And I think it starts with Marc Gasol. I think it's time to trade Marc Gasol. I think it's time to see what you know, barring some kind of crazy thing where no one wants to give you anything, which I think is going to be, I think that's hard pressed that no one's going to want to give you anything from Mark. I think you should trade him. I think you should trade him for the deadline too. I think the idea of Mark and Mike together was great, but I think it's time to move on and it's time to rebuild for the future. Unfortunately, as much as I hate that, because I love Mark, I like to watch. I mean, as a basketball player, I really enjoy Mark and he's one of my favorite players of all time. But it's just, it's not working. And it's just, what you're asking Mark and Mike to be people who they're not, especially Mark. You want Mark to be the number one or number two option on a team when he's the number three option on a team or number four option on a good team. You know, I mean, he's not that guy, and the Grizzlies wanted to be that guy, and he's never been that guy and will never be that guy. And so that's the main issue is that, you're never gonna have, you're never gonna be able to have a you're never gonna be able to have that where Mark's number one and he's aggressive and he's gonna do the things you want him to do. It's just not who he is. But anyway, we'll talk about that more later on as we go through the week. We'll talk about that with all of our guests. We got Matt Moore coming up in the third segment, but in this next segment, we'll answer your questions. We had a few questions for Monday Mailbag. We'll do that. We'll have Matt Moore in the third segment. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show. Going to do our Monday Mailbag segment right now. On our third segment, we're going to listen to the Matt Moore conversation that I had with Matt Moore, writer for the Action Network. I've already recorded that segment, and it was kind of long. He and I talked for about 25 minutes, so I'm going to keep this segment as short as I can. I know the longer it gets, the harder it gets, so I'm going to skip all the where to send your questions because you guys know that usually every single time we do this. So first question from email is from Will Fogelman. I know Marc Gasol is more valuable to the Grizzlies than he probably would be any other team in the NBA. That being said, all these trades packages seem pretty lowball, all things considered. Of these trades, which trades do you like for Marc? This is the Bleacher Report article that Will sent me. There are some different things in here, and I will preface that I didn't like a whole lot. There's nothing in there that really stands out. I mean, the thing with Marc Gasol is, and I'm not going to get into it here because Matt Moore did a really good job covering it in our next segment, just talking about the idea of Marc Gasol and what you can get back. And the idea of Marc Gasol, you're going to have to take out on bad money. Marc Gasol is not worth just a first round pick straight up. Like, the idea of getting Marc Gasol and getting something in return or getting a pick with it is that you have to take someone's bad contract, because Marc by himself is not good enough to command that. And I think most everybody understands that. And we're going to get into another whole trade Marc Gasol and what trades I like. I'm going to come up with some trades of my own. So Will, just, I would say, I've seen that Bleacher Report article. I don't like any of those. I don't even think a lot of those are realistic, to be quite honest. I would say for trade ideas, obviously listen to Matt's conversation coming up in the next segment. He's got some good ideas. And then probably Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe tomorrow, Wednesday, I'm going to have some of our own ideas that I think are actually realistic and actually might happen. And actually could get you excited because there might be a few younger players in those type deals. So I would say for that question, stay tuned. Let's go for the next question. This comes from Grant Hall. Shout out to Grant Hall. Went to college together. So shout out for the show or for the question. But his question is the percentage chance of Mark and Mike are both on the roster at the start of next season. I'd say the percentage chance of Mark being on the roster is about 50%. You know, I think the Mike question really stems from the Mark question. Like, if you trade Mark, I think they're more likely to trade Mike, especially if he's unhappy or if he is doesn't want to spend the rest of his career on a bad team. So, you know, I personally hope they trade Mark right away. I hope they trade him tomorrow. I hope we do an emerging podcast because they traded him tomorrow. But I think that probably the percentage chance he's going to be on the roster next season is probably about 50%. I think the most likely scenario that they do for the trade deadline is wait it out. They're not in a position where they feel like they need to get rid of anything. Then their idea is they're only a few games out of the eighth spot in the Western Conference, and they can still make the playoffs and, you know, do all this other stuff. But I'd say probably about 50%. I think Mike's probably a little higher, but I think that really depends on what happens with Mark, just because, you know, he really, obviously, he's not going to want to stay here if he can't or won't be able to be with, you know, a decent team. So I'd say that's probably the best answer I can give you. This next question comes from Michael JT5 at LOL You Think on Twitter. Hit me up in a DM. Can Ivan Rabb be a quality starter with JJJ, or is he just another Deonta Davis? What are your thoughts on him? I like Ivan Rabb. I think he deserves playing time. I think I've said that quite a few times on this podcast. I like the way he plays. I think he plays tough. I think he rebounds the ball well. I think he's got a really great mid-range jumper. I think that's very underrated about his game. I think just fluid and just technically, I think it's technically sound. I like the way it looks. And you're at the point in the season now where you're so bad that it doesn't matter anyway. You know, like, There's no reason to try out Joakim Noah out there. Excuse me, guys. Sorry. There's no reason to try out Joakim Noah out there like he's going to help you in some weird situation. It's stupid. It doesn't make sense. So you're definitely not in a position where you should be playing your young guys. You should be developing for the future. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr. should be like literally playing 38 minutes a night. Like, he should be dead tired. He should be fouling out. If he fouls out in the first quarter, who gives a shit anymore? Like, who cares? Get the kid playing time. Like, that's how he's going to learn to be better, is playing against, you know, quality starting power forwards and centers every single night. And so you put him out there and you see what happens. The same thing with Ivan Rabb. You put him out there in the back of rotations. You see what he have. I think he should be getting quality minutes every night. I don't think there's any reason to not play him at this point. I like Ivan Rabb. I like him as an idea. But there's really I don't think that we can really tell what he is right now, just because he hasn't got the minutes, hasn't got the time. But I think he deserves the time. He deserves the minutes, just because even if we talked about the same idea with Javon Carter, it can't be worse than what you're rolling out there right now with Shelvin Mack. Same thing. It can't be worse than what you're rolling out there with Joakim Noah. So you play your young guys, you see what they are, and if you at the end of the year they're not very good, then they're not very good, and you get rid of them. And that's what you do. But if they're turns out they're good, then you keep them and you play them, and they develop into actual NBA players. So that's something obviously the Grizzlies don't do enough of. They've had trouble with them in the past, but hopefully they'll do that without a rep. I do have one more question from Twitter. This comes from where is this from? This comes from the 4 Point Play podcast, at the underscore 4 Point Play. A huge hypothetical of what would happen if never signed Chandler Parsons. I replied on Twitter already that I don't know how I'm going to answer this question. I really don't. I mean, the problem with management, they would have probably, honestly, if they didn't have signed Chandler, they probably would have signed Evan Turner. You know, he was probably the next like wing, a big free agent in that class. I think it's Evan Turner. Yeah, it's Evan Turner, I think. So they probably would have ended up with him, and he wasn't. I think he went to Portland. So like, it's not like he was blowing it up either. So I think they were going to spend that money. Like the what it boils down to, even if they didn't sign either one of those guys, they were gonna sign somebody. Like, they weren't just going to carry the cap space into the next year. They wanted to have a quality free agent signing, and they want to try to make a splash and try to get a big free agent here. Like, they were going to sign somebody that year that had all this money. Not a whole lot of, like, not a huge group of free agents that were good, but they were going to sign somebody at any point. So I don't think it's as bad as, you know, obviously Shannon Chandler was really bad just because he hasn't obviously contributed, and then you have escaping in this hole in this your roster, and you're having to pay for it. So you know, it's really tough to tell, obviously, and it goes the same way, like, what would happen if Chandler Parsons was not hurt, you know? Like, you know, it's the hypothetical game is hard to play. It's very hard to even think about what would happen, what wouldn't happen. So there's really no telling, honestly. I think they probably would likely to always going to sign somebody with that money. But there's no telling. I mean, you know, the other guys you signed could have gotten hurt. I mean, it's not Chandler's fault. He got hurt. He doesn't want to be hurt. I've said that enough on this podcast. It's not his fault. I mean, I don't blame him for taking the money at all. I mean, some of the things he's done around the Grizzlies franchise have been weird. And he's kind of, you know, has to be, you know, smarter about the things he does. But I also think he didn't care. So, but yeah, I mean, it's hard to play the hypothetical game. I appreciate the question, but it's difficult to answer. And I hope I kind of answered it as best I could, because it's difficult to really understand that. But coming up next in the next segment, as promised, Matt Moore will be joining me from the Action Network. A very, very insightful conversation. Really, really kind of breaks down the Marc Gasol dilemma and the trade and just kind of everything from that angle. And is very, 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 very just really smart a way to think about it. So I encourage you to stay through the break. Make sure you listen to that conversation. That's coming up next. Welcome back to the show. I have Matt Moore, writer for the Action Network. Matt, thanks for joining me, man.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. As we record this on Sunday night, I wish your Chiefs had done better, but alas, we shall move on. I do want to talk to you about the Grizzlies and kind of the state of where they are at.
the Grizzlies had a difficult weekend. They had a game against Boston where I thought they were in it, and the Raptors, that they played well against Boston, and the Raptors game, they kind of went back to the same old stuff. Do the Grizzlies, where do they go from here? Should they be tanking? Obviously, it's kind of too late in the game to be doing that, but where do they go from here at this point in the season?
Yeah, I still think there's a chance they can get in the bottom eight, and so I think that there's probably a reason to go ahead and get started. Like, even if they don't, I'm okay with giving up the pick this year. And like, sure, Boston gets a great pick, good for them. But you know, I think overall, I'm willing to give up the ghost. For years, I fought against the idea they should blow it up, and I think it was right to. I think they should have held out. I think you do have to hold out as long as possible. You hold out until you're absolutely sure that the run is over. The run's over. Like, the run's just over. It's just time to go ahead and get started on the rebuild. I'm writing about this now over at Action. Like, part of it is in 20 – Calkins wrote about this over at the Commercial Appeal in 2017 before Para bought the majority shares. He said he wrote about how the lease is up in 2021, but to get out of it, like, you have to pay diminishing returns as a fee that goes all the way through 2028. But 2021 is kind of the first point at which you can actually start making the move to get out of there. Now, the minority owners can come in and say, hey, no, we're going to buy you out and keep the team here. And that's hopefully what happens if Para decides to go that route, or Para just says, no, we're going to re-up. We're not going anywhere. We like Memphis. We're staying here. By that timeline, though, part of it is the only way that the opt-out triggers is if you haven't met certain ticket or suite thresholds, right? So by 2021, you need your attendance to be decent. That gives you a very narrow timeline to get back to being decent. Now, I think it's doable, but you have to get started right now. I think there's a plan. I think there's a formula for how they can do it, but they have to get aggressive now. I would probably try and keep the top eight protected, get in the bottom eight. I would trade both Mike and Mark for specific packages built around long-term assets. So you trade Marc Gasol to a team that is just as desperate as you are, say a Charlotte is a good candidate, on a short-term timeline, where if things don't work with Gasol and the day after and the year after, they are horrible, you have their pick. That's what you target. You are trying to get a C-grade Boston Celtics, Brooklyn Nets type deal. And the way to do that is you can't trade Marc Gasol and be like, I want four picks. That's never going to happen. And you can't even trade Marc Gasol, honestly, for a first-round pick. What gets lost is it's not that Mark's not worth it. It's that starting in 2011 when the CBA changed, and then further in 2016 when the cap spike happened, what happened is first-round cost control picks became so valuable you cannot move them. They are an impossible thing to trade at this point unless you're getting a legit superstar, which Mark's no longer is, and Mike isn't either, as much as I love him. So what you do is you go to Charlotte, you go to Detroit, you go to New Orleans, and you say, I will take on your big contract, and you get Marc Gasol. You get a huge upgrade for Kemba Walker, and I'm going to take on Bismack Biyombo's remaining deal, both. You get off of a big deal for you, and you get cap space, and you get a better player. You get both of that, and all you got to do is you got to give me your 2021 or 2022 unprotected first rounder. And that's how you sell that deal. You say, I want Malik Monk. I want Miles Bridges. I want whoever. You try and get the best asset you can out of that deal, and that's what you do.
Right.
You do the same thing with Mike, and you hopefully get a better return because Mike's in a better place in his career. You go to Detroit, and you say, I'll give you Mike Conley, and I'll take on Reggie Jackson, but I want Stanley Johnson, who's not good. I want your 2009 and 2021 unprotected first rounder, and I want your 2023 unprotected first rounder. I want both of those picks because you don't have the young assets that the other teams do to give it to me. That's how you get this done. This is what people have been talking about. What you don't do, you do not trade for cap space. That's not what you do. The worst thing you can do, the worst thing you can do is trade those guys for cap space this year or next year when you're a bad team rebuilding around Jaren and you have to spend that money somewhere. And then your front office, trying to keep its job, is like, well, no, this guy's really good. Like, if this works out, he could be really good. And then you're the Magic, who gave Bismack Biyombo the very deal I suggested you take on because they can't get off of him. Detroit in 2009 paid Ben Gordon $55 million over 5 years. And it was an albatross going into 2010, where there was the biggest free agency class in history. But they were a small market, and they had all this money, so they spent it because they thought that was the best they could do. They paid Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva. Do not do that. You try and acquire as many small picks as possible, and the price for that, you just get over the salary floor by taking on as much money as possible. That's what I would be in this situation. It is time to give up the ghost. I hate it. I wish that I loved it when they were winning games early. I was hopeful that they would be have another run in them, but it's over. It's done. They're eight back. There's too many games and too many teams in front of them. There's no point in this anymore. It's time to get ahead of the deal.
Well, I had recorded my intro to the podcast, this show earlier, and I said the exact same thing. This weekend was kind of the one that broke me too. The one against the Raptors. It's just like, look, it's just not working anymore. And you're right. You give a front office too much money. You do the same thing you did a couple of years ago, and you signed Chandler Parsons when they had all this cap space. And what are they going to do? Well, they signed Chandler Parsons. That's what they did. So, for better or worse, that's what they did with it. So, do you think a deal like that it seriously exists out there for Marcus Gasol at this point? I mean, as good as up and down as he's been this year.
I think if you offer to take on the money, yes.
Okay.
I think if you offer to take, because if you're Charlotte, okay. And you're saying, wait, so you're saying we go in to this summer, we have Kemba who we can re-sign after we hit the cap, we'll have Marc Gasol, and we'll have cap space because we get off of the Bismack Biyombo deal, we can go add a third guy. Like if we clear off Batum or whoever, and like I would honestly be up for that. I would be like, look, you know, if you're gonna pay these guys out anyway, you know, like clear as much as you can off of the cap. And then Charlotte all of a sudden is like, wait, we could actually build a contender around Kemba. And Michael Jordan's going to be way more into that approach. Right.
Yep.
Than he is going to be for like, we're going to let Kemba walk in and we're just going to lose him. You can also take advantage of things like if the Clippers start to slip, well, the Clippers, what do they want to do this summer? They want to get Kawhi Leonard. They want to get Kevin Durant. They want as much cap space as possible. Right.
Right.
Mark's player option complicates that. But you can basically offer, like, look, we'll take on more money than even we're sending out with Mark. We'll give you Mark, okay? And you'll have Mark and whatever B-grade hustle try-hard players they have. And we'll take as much of your, like, the big money contracts as you want. We'll take those on. We'll take on as much money as you want, like up to the luxury tax. We'll take on whatever you want. But, you know, you have to give us Montrezl Harrell. And you got to give us a pick in the future. Now, Montrez is more valuable than Mark at this point, which is depressing as hell. But he just is. he just is. And so the way that you sell that is you're like, no. Like, we're getting Montrez because we're also taking all of your garbage. We're giving you a good player, a guy that when engaged and healthy is a good player for a good young player who is inconsistent. And for taking on whatever money you need to get off of so you can go pursue your big deals this summer. That's what a lot of teams did. That's what Houston actually did to New York. And they sent them Tracy McGrady because Tracy McGrady was expiring. And so New York could go chase the big free agents, and they swung out and they got Mark Stoudemire instead.
Right. Yeah.
Which, you know, didn't help out as much. So the question is, like, you know, what teams are going to be in that position? Here's my thing. Teams are always a little bit more desperate than we give them credit for. They're always just a little bit more desperate than we ever really amass. Like, GMs are trying to save jobs. You know, owners are trying to get ticket sales. Like, there are factors that go into these things way beyond
just basketball.
Beyond basketball, right? And right. The same thing with Memphis. Like, you need to try and pay the bills. But this gives you an opportunity to clear the decks and essentially start building entirely around Jaren. Now, that presents with it certain complications and dangers, right? Because it's like the number one thing is you got to get a point guard now. Like, in the summer, you got to get a point guard. The ideal would be you make it into the top eight just barely, all right? And you have the eight, and you pick up a mid-level 16-17 pick, okay? And then you're able to trade up. And then you say, hey, we'll give you X the eight and this other pick that we picked up. We'll give you those three picks so that we can move up higher. This draft sucks, don't get me wrong, but if you're able to get the best point guard prospect, and I don't know who that is yet, but if you're able to get the best point guard prospect out of this draft class, like now you're at least you're like, okay, if this works, which you got to hit the pick, but if you're able to get the best point guard out of the class, all right, you have a point guard to pair with Jaren, you have a young core, your cap's clean, you've taken on money, so you're stabilized, but you're just like, okay, we're just building around these young guys. We're going to suck next year. We'll hopefully get some cap space the year after, and then we'll go from there.
Right. Yeah. What do you, I guess all that being said, I think you're right about all of that. All that being said, what is the actual reality that Chris Wallace and the Grizzlies do something smart like that before the trade deadline?
So here's the thing. I think Calkins can probably speak. Calkins can probably speak to ownership. Harrington can probably speak to ownership. I'm not in a position to know. I can't tell you what Pera is going to do. I just can't predict what he's going to do. It's pretty like that to me is the thing. Is like I don't. The front office to me is like I'm way more concerned with like what Pera wants. Right.
Right.
I'm way more concerned with like
if Mark goes, it's going to be Pera's decision, not anybody else's.
Yeah. Like I think if the biggest thing is like if Pera looks at his balance sheet and is like, I want to hit the salary floor, like it's time. Because like I reported a little bit of this at the deadline last year. One thing that people got confused about was that the idea that they didn't trade Tyreke Evans because they couldn't get a first round pick. And that's not what happened. They had first round pick offers on the table, but that required them to take back money and they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't take back money. So now that could be because like, oh, hey, we want to rebuild around this summer. Like that's, you know, entirely like possible. Or it could just be the Pera was like, I don't want to pay the luxury tax. I don't want to pay this high of a salary bump. Like I just don't. And that's stuff that we don't know. So a lot of it just is like, where's Pera at financially? What's he willing to spend and what's he willing to take on? Like the dream scenario, look, the dream scenario is obviously like some sort of like golden goose comes along and a really good player is available for like Kyle Anderson and Garrett Temple and like a first, like a 2020 first. But even then, I don't know if you can do that at this point. Like at this point, I would be like, I can't give up another first rounder. I don't know where I'm going to be in 2 years. I just don't.
Right.
I don't know where I'm going to be in 20 or in 2021 rather. Like I don't know where I'm going to be in 2 years. I just can't. I can't surrender another unguaranteed or even like lottery. Like I can't give you another pick unless it's like top 20 protected. I can't give that to you, and you're not going to get any sort of impact player for that. Like that's just the white horse is not coming. If there was a way I could see it, I would be like, all right, sure. But short of like Chandler Parsons suddenly waking up tomorrow and his knee hurts, his knee is fixed, and everybody and the divide with the front office is over. And everybody's on the same page and Chandler comes back at 100%, which is not happening. There's no other scenario that I could see. So, you know, I think, look, Wallace is going to want to win. He's going to want to win. Like he's not really wired to do the tank thing, but I do think that with prodding, if ownership sends down an edict, that is just like, hey, it's time. I want this stuff off. The key there is if he says, I want my salary lowered. I want it to be as low as you can get it. The key there is like you're saying, okay, hey, we can lower the salary. We can't get it as low as you want it. And we got to take on this money, but it's going to get us these picks in the future. And then the owner's like, right. Oh, you get picks with it? Oh, that sounds great. And then you create some excitement there. So that to me is a sense. Like, look, the most likely scenario is that they just don't do anything, that they just keep trying to ride it out because that's like the miracle turnaround, they went 16-3 to finish the year, snuck into the playoffs as the eighth seed, had a really competitive first round series. Like that's the dream scenario for the front office that keeps everybody's job, you know, like, and it's a feel good story. So like they might hold on to that hope as long as possible. I think it's going to take ownership to be like, hey, because part of it is if you're Wallace or Hollinger or whoever, it's really hard to go to Robert Pera and be like, we're going to be bad. And there's no way for us not to be bad. So in the interest of the fans and what's best for the franchise, we need to make ourselves worse, which lowers my job security and increases the odds of my being fired. But this is what's best for the franchise. That just never happens. Like you have to have and now what I think Pera should do is Pera should tell Wallace and Hollinger and the whole front office and be like, you're safe. Like no matter, I'm not going to hold you accountable. I wanted to compete. We thought we could compete. It was a good bet. It was wrong. You're not accountable. go do what you need to in order to make this franchise viable long term. I want to be back in contention by 2022. In 3 years, I want to be good again.
Right.
Like, that's great leadership. If he does that, then it's awesome, and then like everybody wins there. You know, you may still have questions about Wallace and his ability to make those decisions, but at least like you're not in disarray and trying to find a new executive and trying to like manage all this stuff. And this is before we even get to the fact of JB, who obviously just got a new deal, and you're gonna have to pay that out if you get rid of him, because then you're bringing in a GM who didn't hire the guy.
Right. Yeah.
So it's messy, it's complicated stuff, it sucks. But like, there's a way out of this that can work. You just have to be pretty aggressive about it. The other thing is, like, if you move Mike and Mark, you might as well start looking at Kyle Anderson and Garrett Temple, and be like Temple in particular. Like, I'm not as high on Anderson as I think most of Memphis media is. Like, it's fine, but I just don't know. Like, I don't know any contender that's like, ooh, Kyle Anderson, he can make a difference for us. Versus like Garrett Temple, I look at as like, no, that's a guy that can swing a game for you. He hits threes and plays defense.
Sure,
that's valuable.
You mentioned JB, obviously. He is limited, obviously, with the roster construction this year, and the way it is just not – I don't think the roster, obviously, is as good as they thought it was. But I think – so it's not terrible. I think they should be winning more games than they have. A lot of head-scratchers. What's your thoughts on JB? I know I've always said that I think it's a PR kind of disaster if they let him go this year. Just I don't think they can stomach it after the amount of coaches they have been through the past few years. But what's your take on JB?
Well, what's like the how many years does he have left on his deal? I thought he was signed a 3-year deal.
Yeah, he signed a 3-year deal. Right? Yeah, yeah.
So it's probably for very little because he was an interim coach that took over. But I have a hard time seeing ownership being willing to pay off the remaining 2 years of his contract and hire a new coach, which there are good assistants you can go get right now. Like, there are a lot of really good assistants you could go get. But you're still probably going to be paying a pretty good price for him. And I have a hard time seeing ownership being like, yeah, let's pretty much do that. Like, I'm willing to pay off the rest of JB's deal and go hire somebody else. Like, that's a lot to ask. So I think JB's probably good through next year. Like, just based off of how these things usually go, like, they may fire him towards the end of next year. That'd be my expectation.
Yeah. It's definitely been a difficult ride for the Grizzlies, for sure this year, but Matt Moore, writer for the Action Network. I appreciate you joining me, man.
Hey, thanks. Oh, one more thing on JB, by the way. I hope that, that does not happen. I like JB, and I think they did a really good job early in the season, and I hope that things turn around for him. I just want that clear. Like, I'm not like, ooh, he should get fired. I don't know. I think it's hard to figure out whether or not he should get fired in this situation.
Well, that's what I mean. I wrote a piece like a couple weeks ago defending him, just because it's hard to see exactly. It's just so hard because I don't think the roster is where it needs to be. It's kind of hard to tell exactly how good of a coach he is. Granted, there's been some things that have been kind of head scratchers, but I also think that's, you know, he's a rookie coach and he's trying different things, and some things are working and some things aren't. So, and like I said, I don't think anything changes, obviously, just the way the situation is for sure anytime soon. But again, Matt Moore, thanks for joining me, man. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, man.
Thanks again to Matt for joining me. As always, make sure you follow the show at Lockdown Grizz. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at King_producer. Make sure you're getting your Monday mailbag questions in all week long. If it's a pressing question and time sensitive, I'll answer it on the next show. If it's not, I'll hold it for the next Monday. If you don't like either of those platforms, go to facebook.com/lockdowngrizzlies. Send me a message there. If you don't like that, send me an email at lockdowngrizz@gmail.com. And if you don't like that, I can't help you. Then if there's another messaging service that you want to use, then let me know. Other than that, I can't help you. But yeah, make sure you're getting those questions in. We'll answer those every single Monday in the second segment. Make sure you stay tuned for tomorrow's show. We have Sam Strantz coming in from the Barn Burner podcast. He is a smart dude. Also went to college with him as well, oddly enough. But he'll be on tomorrow joining me to give his kind of take on what's going on. I'm sure we'll talk about the game, the Pelicans game for MLK Day. So that'll be happening too. So big week, long week, lots of guests. Make sure you join it every day. Make sure you're subscribing every day in iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, or just go to LockedOnGrizzlies.com.